Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I'm here today with Sister Charlotte Davenport, and I am so excited that you're with us today. I had the pleasure of meeting Sister Charlotte in Bellevue, Washington a couple of weeks ago. She is part of the Congregation of the Sisters of St. Joseph of Peace. I'm assuming you'll give us a little background there as well. But when we met, I was so impressed with not only your current knowledge, but then I was equally impressed that you've been effectively doing impact investing or involved in some form or fashion for the last 30 years. So very much excited to have you on today so people can learn more about you and your story, but then also learn from just some of your past experiences. So welcome.
Great to be here involved in this conversation because it's an opportunity to actually kind of talk about the history of impact investing a little bit and to share with people how it can happen. You just don't even realize you're doing it sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, as I told you before we got started, when I first met you in person and we just started dialoguing, what struck me is you've been doing this in some form or fashion 30 years. And not to speak ill of the financial services industry, but your knowledge is as deep as anybody that I talk to. So I'm anxious to get into this. So let's take a step back. Give us a little background of yourself. I mean, where you grew up, where you went to school, and then maybe what you've been doing the last, whatever the math is, with the congregation and what you're focused on today.
I was born in California, in Southern California. I actually am 75, so I was born in 1948. So, but I grew up in those, you know, post-war years, you know, and I'm the youngest of four kids. So, you know, the growing families in that early, in the 50s, 60s decade of life. My dad was, I always thought of him as a gentleman farmer. You know, he worked full time, you know, but we also, I got to raise cows and we had fruit trees and we canned. So I have this whole, a little bit of the rural background in a sense.
But whereabouts in Southern California?
Yeah, it's Riverside, just outside of Riverside, yeah. California, which is in this near, you know, it's a nice area. At the time we were famous for having the mother orange tree. I went to the University of California, Riverside. Got my basic BA degree there in actually in biology with a minor in history with a focus on microbiology a little bit. Enough credits in microbiology that I qualified for a GS-5 federal service rating, which for me, my perspective, that was great because my dad had always been in federal service and I thought that was a great career path to go. So I ended up in Alaska after college and worked for the Environmental Protection Agency for about 8 years. In microbiology research, doing environmental research, working particularly on the hot oil impacts of hot oil spills in the north and a couple other areas of interest, water, clean water issues, water pollution. And so I come from the science world into religious life. I entered my congregation in 1978. I was very quickly put on into finance. And I thought, well, why is this? Well, I was a person, I had owned property. I had a checking account, and that time, that was not the real life of religious. They were just beginning to have individual checking accounts. It just wasn't what was done. So it was like I was this experienced person who had lived in the world in a different way. So I was invited to be a part of our growing understanding of what it meant to be actually responsible for assets that we had, stewardship of them. I became a treasurer of the Religious Institute at that time for. And the amount of training I got was wonderful. I look back and think the richness of it. I had, you know, civil law, canon law, business law, insurance, wills, property, you know, all these things that you need to have when you think of the whole care of something. And I'm not a, you know, a CPA or anything like that, but I'm more of a finance manager with this kind of broad background. But it works well for me. I like the big picture stuff. I went around and I have my first master's is in whole systems design from Antioch, which is about systems theory, really focused from the angle of systems theory and how things operate. And I love to think through different lenses of how one can see the world from such different places and that you have to think about all those different places if you want to understand or listen well to other people. Out of that, collaboration has become a real significant part of how I like to operate in the world. I've had a lot of different experiences. I've been like an administrative assistant, and I've been a director of a low-income housing development group. I was in one of the church an archdiocese. I was the chief financial officer and chancellor, which kind of means I oversaw all the internal stuff of the diocese in many ways. So I've had lots of wonderful opportunity. We have, as a congregation, we sponsor healthcare ministry, some housing for women in transition, and involved with inner peace and justice work. And I've been on boards, all those different kinds of boards for doing that. So I just had this
Wow.
opportunity, rich, diverse experience. And on the investment side, that's always kind of been my area of specialty of advising us to develop with congregations across the world, around in the US anyway, to look at how do we properly prepare. First of all, we were looking at how do we prepare for retirement, because many of us were growing older. And so I got involved early on in helping people look at what was going on with all of their assets, and then how were they planning for the future, which often involves some kind of looking at an investment portfolio of some kind, or creating that, or looking at how they can save for the future. So I think I kind of got in on the ground level of all of those kinds of work. And then early on, as a congregation, we were invited to be a part of an investment in Chicago. All these religious institutes, through a group called the Christian Brothers, were invited to consider making a CD, buy a CD for 2 or 3 years with this group called to support a bank in South Chicago to help redevelop the area. And so that was kind of my introduction to, we all called it alternative investing then, but it was a real movement for the religious congregations across the country to look at different ways they could help things develop. And here in the Northwest, I became very involved with the development of a co-op fund to get it started to work on women-owned businesses and co-op businesses. Young businesses starting that, they really were just at that urge, but they weren't big enough to get into the bank to get lending. And so just to build up that business stuff. So I learned so much in that, about all those basic things about how do you qualify people for loans and that kind of thing. So great experiences.
Can you give us a little background, and feel free to disclose as much or as little as you want? Can you just give us a little background of what a congregation maybe looks like, and specifically around the finances, so people can understand how you and why you are thinking about this stuff so intently?
As avowed religious in the Roman Catholic Church, we take a vow of poverty, which doesn't mean that we're poor, but it means that we agree that all that we have belongs to the congregation. So, like all my earnings or anything that comes, I give in to the congregation. And then I ask for what my needs are, and they provide that. I get a stipend or whatever you want to call it. And like, because we do that, it's a kind of a weird thing that happens. When you share everything, there's always a ton, there's enough to meet the needs. It may not be everything, but it's enough to meet your needs. Then the other piece that I had early on to learn to think about is that, to the outside world, we have to put together a finance package that explains our finances, right? If you want to have a loan or borrow something or get a grant. And I remember I had to learn, how do I explain to the sisters these financial pages, because it doesn't make any sense to what our life was like. And so
Interesting.
I did a whole bunch of work on this, values. How are our values expressed in the outside world, and how do those financials express our values? So that's kind of really the kind of path or the focus that has helped me, is how to, and over the years, nonprofit accounting has really begun to say, how are those documents that we make you create for banks and whatnot really reflect what you're doing? And there has become a more value-based reality to that, so that what it really is talking about, not just somebody's presumed Zoom asset value, but what is the actual activity you're doing.
Obviously, I would argue you all are ahead of the game. I would say the outside world is really starting to wrestle with this question of how do you align your values with your charity? How do you align your values with investing? Anything you can share from your perspective of what happens when you start to, and I'm going to leave it to investing for a second. What happens to you as an investor when you invest this way, in the mindset of how it's impacting others?
Well, I mean, I think for us as a congregation, and for myself particularly, I think I realize that we always want to have our investments doing good. and not just earning money. We, yes, we want to make sure we have sufficient to cover our needs, but we also don't want to be, I think I first became aware of it because we didn't want to be involved in buying missiles and triggers for guns and whatnot. And so we began to say, well, where are we invested? And so in the early years, we were doing exclusionary, but then a few people got involved with saying, well, we're going to own some Boeing stock, say, so that we can go to the meeting and say, we don't really want you to be involved in doing this work. We don't think it's actually going to give us the money that we need as an investor. If you're going to give us, we want it to be doing good, not doing evil. So we were quite involved in doing that. So again, we began to really look at how are our values being expressed in the assets that we've decided to acquire to give us stability in our income world. We became quite involved in the corporate, at least voting our corporate shares. So, over the years, more and more involved vocally with corporate resolutions. As you may be aware, where religious communities are quite involved in doing that today.
How would you best describe who you are in the context of where you're at in your life journey?
Well, I think I actually am a person who's just come to realize that I have this vast knowledge. And up until maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I never felt I was really competent. I was kept wanting to learn more and more and more, and I still do. But I realize that I took this workshop called the Livable Futures Workshop, which was really looking at how can we take the ideals of Laudato Si, which is a Catholic program on looking at integral ecology and evaluation of the world, but to create an economy that works for that reality. In that, I began to realize, as I talked with other people, how much experience I had. I just didn't realize it because most oftentimes finance people don't, they're just talking to each other and they don't realize whether they have, and they're one person for an institute, they don't always necessarily know that what they're doing is so much further along the line than somebody else's till you get the chance to dialogue across congregations. It was a wonderful gift to me because I began to grow much more confident in how I put together all of my experiences to say, yes, there's wisdom here. There's always more to learn, but I can really go forward. So I'm at that kind of place in my life where I'm beginning to see I have some wisdom to share. And maybe I'm not as reticent to share it as I might have been 5 years ago.
Yeah, no, look, I didn't mean to validate you 2 weeks ago when we met, but I'm validating you because, you know, Jonathan and I were like, man, she knows her stuff. So it was actually extremely fun for us. So how would you describe, and you can answer this personally or as a congregation, how are you all trying to change the world?
Well, we're trying to do good. And in that good, we're hoping that a life gets changed in a way that it transforms in its local situation. From an investing perspective, the impact choices that we're trying to make are ones that really allow for people to be individually involved in creating their own world of jobs. Yet we do some direct charitable stuff in terms of, you know, basic needs, food and shelter, that kind of thing. But ideally, we want people to be in a place where they can find their journey in becoming what we call be a part of a healthy community for themselves and whatever. And I'm very much a part of Mercy Housing Northwest and Mercy Housing Inc., which is a very large affordable housing nonprofit in the U.S. And one of the things that we work on, we provide as a standard resident services to help people find their path to self-sufficiency. To me, that's been very important, and it works whether you're healthcare or housing. Everybody needs to find that path. And I think that's what we as a congregation believe in, because we're so dedicated to for each person to be in that place that it provides them with that sense of hope.
If I had brought up the idea of job creation to the investing world inside the U.S. pre-COVID, most wouldn't view that as really impact investing. Now, if I said, let's go invest in Africa for jobs, that's impact investing. And I think COVID actually woke people up to say, no, having a good job with a career path wherever you are is highly impactful, not only to society, but for the one's own dignity and having a family unit and all that kind of stuff. So it's, did you see any of that or hear about any of that shift because of COVID?
Yeah, I think I do. There's a lot more, you know, I think it's actually happening, but we, from the statistics side that you look at in the world, you know, like what's going on? You know, people who went to remote work, in that they found time to do some of their own things. I think there's a lot of entrepreneurship going on that we don't even have a way of counting. There always has been what I would call an underground economy. Cottage industries, they, you know, and during the pandemic, it was a little bit more visibility for some of the cottage industry. People were working, doing things out of their own place and just doing what they could do, creating a piece of jewelry or soap or craft or an art thing that they could sell online. And so, you know, it's an interesting change in how we think about economy. What makes up economy? What we measure in the big world out there is hardly anything compared to what is really going on in all the interactions in our world. I'm not a favorite fan of gross domestic product or any of those kinds of things, because they just don't really measure the reality that we're doing today.
Okay, great. When do you realize the power of capital, and maybe what does that mean to you?
I'm glad you said, what does it mean to me? Because when you had sent that as a question, and the capital, I never think about capital at all.
Yep.
I've been pondering that question and realized, I looked up, you know, what is capital? You know, capital is resource and asset. And I realized that I've never really thought about capital. I've thought about, how do I use my assets to serve others? And I realized that the other pieces that I kind of focused a little bit on for my own is, what is equity? You know, from a financial perspective, you know, you build equity in your house. But I have to tell you this funny story. I had bought some land, you know, and I was making payments on it. So I didn't necessarily own the land in my head. And I needed to get a personal loan to build the structure in this property. So I went to the bank and I said, I don't know how to do that. So I didn't put any assets down on the asset side. So the guy was there and he says, well, you own, what about this land? I says, well, yes, it's $20,000. He says, well, that's an asset. Didn't you not know? I mean, I missed the whole point of young. I was in my 20s. I didn't know anything really. That to me was a real opening, a learning about, oh, how we put this together in the real world. Equity is important because it gives you that sense of ownership. I don't think about ownership now as much as I do assets of which I am responsible for. Mm. And that gets me into the idea of stewardship, mm-hmm. in the sense of, I don't necessarily own things, but I need to take care of them in order for them to be usable or have some, to be able to do something with them. For a while, I was really looking at the issues of racism and color of law, you know, the impact on mortgages and all that kind of thing.
Right.
And when you look at people who've been denied any ability to gain equity in their property or their land because of racism, it's such a disservice and injustice. I'm constantly aware of looking at legislation and whatnot to make sure that, what are we doing? How are we changing this? How are we allowing? We can't continue to allow that to happen, but it's still happening in the world all the time.
Let me just dig a little bit deeper, because I look at your life and others in the congregation, and I can argue both ways, but at one level, you all are living out stewardship in a much richer way than those of us who are not. I mean, I guess we could share outside, but you all have this, you clearly have this generosity mindset. So the question I have for you is, when you all think about what you do with your capital from a charity standpoint or for investing standpoint, how do you think about how you use your capital? When do you use charity? When do you use impact investing? Are they incongruent? I just need thoughts on that.
I believe there's a continuum. I believe that at sometimes charity is really what's needed at that moment for that situation. And it helps to stabilize where they don't have to worry about paying it back, but it creates an opportunity. Maybe later on, particularly for when you're thinking about job creation, you might want to give a second one to see if they're continuing to build and create. But then the next place is, well, maybe they're ready for a small loan. What kind of terms can we provide to them or work with somebody who can provide them? Now, we've been involved in making investments in microlending funds for a long time because I do think microlending is absolutely essential for particularly I looked at it for the US and it doesn't work well in our US economy because our costs are so high. It works better in some of the more rural countries. And what's the guy's name who was a Nobel Peace Prize for economics, or Nobel Prize for Peace Prize? I think it was, and he had the Bangladesh Bank.
Yeah, I know the name.
Yeah. And he has two books. And I looked at this. So when I read the second one, I was trying to say, how can we apply this to the US economy? And he tried to do that. It just didn't work very well, but it was close to what we were doing with the Grameen Bank and all that kind of thing, and what we did in South Lower Chicago. But I think in the U.S. the better focus through that is through co-ops and credit unions kind of thing to create that kind of same momentum. How do you move people and move a group, a community, or whatever to that more stable place? What, how does their particular economy work? I believe that every group has their own economy. There's the bigger economy around them, but they also have a way of working. We have, as a congregation, our own internal economy, how it gets shared and mixed around. But then, how, because we do that, we have been able to build up surplus in a sense. That's how we take that surplus and we decide we're going to give. We actually now have made decisions we're going to use this much of this for this and this much of that for that. Knowing that from our investment advisors, this is what we need. This is where we have to maintain for stability, knowing where, because we have, actuarial tables. We know how long we're going to live and all that kind of thing. So we're very sophisticated in that regard. But at the same time, we want to be simplistic about, but with clarity about where do we want to give. Because our congregation is about peace through justice, we try to focus our lens of where we're giving through that lens of where our values are.
No, that's very helpful. I'd love to hear your thoughts if you were addressing people of faith, but that aren't necessarily part of a congregation. I think there's this feeling like charity, and I'm going to leave out giving to the church. Let's leave that as a separate bucket for a second. Charity is viewed as more holy than investing, if I just had a general statement. Do you agree with that, or would you challenge that notion at all?
I think it really depends on how you think about what you own, what you have. I mean, I think, scripture-wise, we're all saying almsgiving is so important, which is charity. That's how we think of charity. But when I think about the dignity of the human person, sometimes that almsgiving is not necessarily what that person needs. So then I think, well, how is it that I'm asked to accompany that person in life? And it may be a loan. It may be a support of something that they're interested in, not necessarily for them individually. Maybe in terms of working with that person from a sense of caring about who they are, or that organization about caring about what they do. How is it that I'm supposed to involve my assets or my giving? Is it only charitable? Maybe the better part in helping them work in the better world is a small loan of some kind to help them learn, or to give them mentoring about how to manage that loan, or both.
Yeah, I love your thinking. I think I don't, maybe I didn't tell you this, but my wife and I have, it started with my passion, and she's absolutely on board, but I have a passion for men and women who are either incarcerated or formerly incarcerated. So we've been investing in businesses that either are run by formerly incarcerated or that hire formerly incarcerated or are benefiting that group of individuals. It's interesting. I have some people say, well, you should just be giving them money. I mean, if there's an investment for you, then somehow I'm using them. And you said a word that I often say is, and a lot of these men and women will affirm this, the dignity for me to see them as investment worthy, because I believe they're going to make it for themselves and they're going to help us get a return. There's real dignity for the right person at the right time to get an investment capital versus charitable. So what you said resonates 100% with what I've experienced personally. And there are times where you know, these men and women, yeah, they just need charity. They need some help. They need to get on their feet, but they also want to be seen as a human being and they want to be invested in. And it's, I digress, but the same thing is true in Africa. You met my brother, and one of the feedback he will hear from Africans is that, and it really frustrates them, is that their perception is that Americans look at Africa for charity, but won't look at them from an investment perspective. And for them, it drives them crazy. They're like, no, we want to be investment. We are investment worthy. So I just affirm what you just communicated.
Well, thank you. I mean, I just think it's so essential to never think about what's just looking at the need, but look at the person. And if you don't look at the person, you miss the point of who are they wanting to become and how can I be on that journey with them?
Yeah. And for me, one of the fascinating parts about impact investing is when you think about others, like you just described, and how you allocate capital, you get to be on that journey with them. And there's oftentimes a joy and freedom that comes in that as an investor. And we tend to think about impact investing from how the capital gets deployed. But personally, my wife and I have been highly impacted by being a part of the investment with these individuals.
Well, you know, maybe it's the same thing, and people might not like to hear this, but when I first was, you know, sisters and I are really very good at asking for charitable money to come. Right. They don't want it for themselves, but we can really go out and ask for other needs. We're not a problem. I had these fundraisers teach us, and one of the things that they've said to us, remember, it's not what you're asking for, but it's asking this person to do something that they really want to do, but they don't know how to do it. Mm. You know, to be a good giver is a step in learning how to use what you have as available.
Yeah.
And sometimes asking people of wealth to give is not necessarily for them. It's giving them new avenues for how to use their life and to give expression to their life and to have a connection in yep. ways of goodness. And that's part of the journey. Everybody's got a different way of being on the journey. And are we open to inviting people to be a part of that journey?
This may be the hardest question of all. If you could have one dream come true for your life, what would it be?
I think my dream really is that as people learn and grow and work together, that life around them that seems in bad shape, but they know that if they do something together, it will get better. That to me is absolutely critical. Hmm. That trusting in one another, dialoguing in with one another, and being at the force in their local place to make something better. To me, that's a dream come true for me whenever that can happen.
So I guess I lied. I'm going to ask you a follow-up question. And I'm going to force you to be a little bit judgmental here in this question. Do you have any advice or anything that somebody who's not part of a congregation that you would want them to know or to experience based on the way your life has played out in community?
Wow. What comes to my mind when you ask me that question is, I would ask them to look around and say, what is it that I'm most uncomfortable with? Why am I uncomfortable with it? And with that answer, what is it that I'm being called to do? Hmm. And in some ways, that means it may be that I have to have this conversation with that person that I really don't want to have a conversation with. Or it may be that I need to apologize for something that I've done, or I need to stop and think, why am I uncomfortable? It may be something in my past life that was a bad experience and I just need to say, oh, maybe was that one moment in time, but it's not what's happening now. And can I move forward and find a new way of being with that? From an individual perspective, if one can't find out how one needs to be in the world in spite of all the stuff that goes on, mm-hmm. then it's hard. And so it's like, how does one grow in belief in oneself? And with that, how does one then live that path that they're called to live in the world as a person with dignity and caring for other people and responding to the signs of the times? One of the things that I am involved in is training leaders in our healthcare ministry. And my particular task actually is to say, how does the charism of our congregation be lived out as they live that out in that ministry? How are they carrying it on? For us, what's important is, you know, how do you see the signs of the times in your local community? And how, as healthcare workers in that community, are you working together to respond to that? I usually kind of lead them on a historical journey of what are the signs of the times. You know, our founder grew up in the Industrial Revolution, you know, had experiences of the poor in Ireland, went through a faith transformation. And in that, her life journey, she had all these experiences, and that influenced her vision of how she was being called to live in the world. But she responded to the signs of the times in terms of what she did. And I, you know, there's a whole history and we could talk about
Sure.
that. But that's the important thing that I was trying to get is to have people ask people in their local healthcare community, you know, what are the issues that they're facing every day? You know, maybe it's homelessness on the streets, or maybe it's people they can't find that are in the hospital, but they need a different kind of care setting and they can't find that for them. How do they work on that situation in their community? Who are they partnering with? And it's been an interesting dialogue to have them look at that journey. But in that, they're able to look in their local situation and realize they have all these partners. It's not just their healthcare as a healthcare worker, their responsibility. They have to work at it together because they might be dealing with one piece of a person's life, but there's this whole big piece of life. And they can't do it all. You got to work with other people. One of my favorite phrases that I kind of don't use it all that often, but I realize that is to think globally and act locally. I think it's like, how do you see the whole world, but then what's going on in your little world? And often it's in your world where you can respond. Every time you can respond and make a little bit of a change or work on something that grows and changes, that has an impact on the bigger world.
Let's play a hypothetical, and you don't need to break this down a bunch. If you had $1 million a day, you personally, what would you go and invest in? And I'm not so much looking for the best investment idea. I'm just curious where your heart is from an investment perspective.
Probably I would do affordable housing. I would look at credit unions that are, or co-ops that are doing creative co-op funding for creating businesses that are co-op owned. I would look at some kind of way of supporting basic healthcare clinics. Side journey here. I can remember sitting down with one of the early administrators of our healthcare system and saying, you know, years ago, people could just go out and do clinics. Today, you can't just really do that because there's all these regulations.
Yeah, right.
The sad part is that there's basic healthcare doesn't get given in a way that it would be so simple to do. If I had $1 million, I would buy a mobile, like a big, you know, RV that can be flitted out with all the mobile clinic, to have a mobile clinic. I believe in mobile clinics, particularly for in rural communities and in areas where farm worker communities. Mobile clinics could provide so much basic care that will improve the quality of life and reduce issues. So to me, that's kind of where my heart is.
Anything else you want to share before we sign off?
Now, I just would encourage people to realize that impact investing is a future-oriented way of thinking about how we can make the world a better place to live.
Very well said. And I'm going to add one thing. Charity, while it's so valuable, only controls so much of the wealth. And it's a little unfortunate, it's a little sliver. To really make a change, you ultimately have to find access to investment capital. Then you really have the ability to influence. Now, you need both to work together, but majority of the wealth in the world is sitting in business and investment. So I couldn't agree more. Sister Charlotte, thank you so much. It's a pleasure having you here today. And I know our listeners will enjoy hearing your story. Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find this show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Till next time, I'm Jeff Schaefer. Thanks so much. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital. It does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.